Hello, I'm Brian.
I'm Claire.
And this is the Computer Weekly
Downtime Upload
Podcast.
And our third voice was
Alex Scroxton, but not the Alex Scroxton you're thinking of. Oh. I'm now the security editor.
You're wearing a new
Computer
hat.
Computer Weekly. It's a brand new hat, it's very fetching. I think you'll all agree.
You traded it in.
Mm. Yeah, got an upgrade.
How does it feel?
I'm really enjoying myself. I've not had this much fun at work in a very long time. And that's not to disparage the networking beat at all, but security is something else, man.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I get to tell you now, I've told work before, but I get to tell you that everything that you write about as part of your job terrifies me.
Yeah, it's terrifying me as well, because I feel like I've put my head above the parapet now. So I'm having to put things like, consider my own personal security on my social media accounts, because suddenly I'm writing about threat groups and nation-state cyber attacks.
It is terrifying. I covered security for a long time, and it is...
If the Chinese aren't already coming for me, thanks to the Huawei coverage, then they'll be coming for me for another reason very soon.
Oh, goodness.
And Alex is standing in for our beloved colleague Caroline, who is in San Jose just now.
Yeah, I hope she's visiting the Winchester Mystery House. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, let's hope she's doing that. She's at a thing called Net Events.
Okay.
I checked it out. She's staying at the working at the Dolce or Dolce Hayes Mansion.
Oh.
It looks really swanky.
Really?
Actually, yeah.
I wonder if it's haunted.
She'll be rubbing shoulders with the Silicon Valley elite.
Nice. Mm-hmm.
It's Net Events is the one that's a tour of different companies. Although there's multiple different companies that come along, right?
But yes, it's a very, very posh place. But Caroline will be back next week when we're going to be discussing, among other things, the capture on BBC TV. Caroline really likes doing the TV-themed ones.
Yeah, I enjoy
She's
the
very good at
TV
it.
One.
Yeah.
My concern is my attention span versus how much you're expecting me to watch by next Friday.
Well, I'm watching The Circle as well. You watching The Circle?
I'm watching
The Circle because you told me to watch The Circle.
I know, and I've seen probably about 10 minutes of it. I'll catch up.
That's going to make a great podcast.
I'll catch up.
Okay.
Have faith.
But next week we're going to do the capture, and Alex, you're coming back for that.
You're getting a twofer, yeah.
As our security editor. So top line in today's podcast, we've really only got two topics today.
Nice.
Which is cyber security and health.
Cool.
Claire and I, we're going to talk about health a bit.
Yep.
Topic close to our hypochondriac hearts. But we're going to start with Alex. And a dire warning, I understand.
From former RSA security executive chairman Art Coviello, who is one of the outspoken cybersecurity experts who do the rounds and speak out on various topics. And this story came to us through our sister title across the channel, Le Magide in France. And it was written by our colleague Valerie Marive, based off a joint statement issued by a number of countries at the end of September. It's a statement on advancing responsible state behaviour in cyberspace. It was signed by pretty much everybody in NATO, our allies in Australia and New Zealand as well, and a few other countries such as Japan and South Korea, sort of the core Western alliance, so to speak.
So not Russia.
Not Russia, not China, not Iran, not North Korea. And the signatory countries basically underscored their commitment to uphold the international rules-based order, work towards its adherence, implementation, and further developments as they pertain to the world of cybersecurity and responsible state behaviour online. This reminded Valerie of a speech that Mr. Coviello gave in 2014, I believe it was, at an RSA conference. So he went to him and asked for his views and got back a little essay, which he very kindly forwarded to.
Has he retired now then?
He retired from RSA, but he's now a VC investor in the Valley. Works for a company called Rally Partners, and they start ups, scale ups, many of them in cyber, that sort of thing.
Mm.
He sent back this almost little essay with some...
Is he not busy then?
Apparently not. He was just sort of hanging out, waiting for Valerie's email.
Waiting to be asked.
Just, you know, I'm just hanging by the phone. No. Someday Tech Target will call.
And he says cyber war as big a threat as nuclear war.
In essence, yeah. He was basically taking the view that given our apparent repudiation of a lot of the sort of rules-based international order, given the political crises of the past few years, the ending of various arms limitations treaties between the US and Russia, the prospect of new arms races and so on, that we're clearly forgetting how devastating nuclear war and chemical warfare can be, and that we need to apply the same, I guess, to treat cyber weapons and cyber security in the same way when it comes to nation state actors.
Define cyber weapon.
That's the thing, it's not really...
It's not a thing yet.
It is a thing, and there are plenty around. Stuxnet was probably a state-developed cyber weapon. I think most cyber experts agree on that. That was the worm that targeted the Iranian nuclear program a few years ago.
So it's stuff like malware, but targeted on critical national infrastructure, ATMs.
Yeah.
I often wonder how much is now reliant on digital and the internet. I mean, like, if systems go down, how long before the nuclear power plants melt out and stuff like that?
A couple of days. I think nuclear power stations have... we call them kinetic. as in non-cyber security things.
Oh, okay.
This is something I've learned. Kinetic is a big word in cyber security to refer to everything else.
Kinetic attack.
Kinetic attack would be me...
Punching
Brian or something. Cyber attack would be me going for his phone.
What if you hit
so
him
the
with
nuclear
his
power
phone?
Stations have
don't encourage him.
I've not gone that deep. I've not gone full black hat just yet. I think nuclear power stations have sort of mechanical safeguards that kick in, such as my limited understanding of the nuclear power.
I mean, this does seem a bit counterintuitive, doesn't it? Because I mean, for like anyone who's not in our world, the idea of a cyber attack and like a nuclear
bomb.
But
only need to think about, and obviously by relating it to nuclear, it does sort of raise the temperature of the conversation a bit, I guess. But you only have to think about how a relatively simple DDoS attack can take down, an entire. They've taken down entire companies, swathes of the internet before now, and we've never been unlucky enough to have truly critical national infrastructure knocked out.
Yeah.
But, you know, if a supermarket's supply chain system is taken down, empty shelves within hours, given the just-in-time nature of how we stock and supply supermarkets.
Sounds as bad as Brexit.
Brexit Clarkson.
So the potential of state-developed cyber attacks is worrying, and we should be worried about that. I'm sorry to say.
What, just like everything else, though? Like, what more? Like, I don't know. Go back to the days of like trading gold, riding around on horses. Seriously.
Horses can be quite dangerous, though.
Not as dangerous as cyber attacks and nuclear weapons.
No, that's true. Apparently not.
Or aeroplanes.
Yeah, but it's civilian targeting in a way, isn't it? Well, in a big way.
I mean,
cyber,
yeah,
because you're going to attack.
But look at the group,
things we all rely on.
The group that went for Airbus, or has come for Airbus several times in the past year or so.
Yeah, tell us about that. What's going on with Airbus?
So they had four major cyber attacks in the past year, they now think. With their suppliers targeted through their VPNs to gain access to Airbus's systems, a sort of lateral movement within the IT environment. Once you gained access. So they targeted four suppliers, two of which were named, one of them Rolls-Royce, the engine manufacturer, and the other a French technology consultancy, and stole documents, pertaining to the certification of Airbus components, information on some military jets that the company develops, and the A350 family of airliners. And a security consultancy this week discovered and named a new threat group, which they've called Avivore. Avivore. That uses very similar techniques to a Chinese state-sponsored group, and the likelihood is this is a new Chinese state group.
What do they want?
Intellectual property.
Oh, for the point of like for money.
China is currently developing a narrow-body twin-engine commercial airliner through a state-owned aviation firm, and the development of it and certification of it is way behind schedule, and it is thought that this is the motivation behind the Airbus attacks.
Wow.
Well, really, if you boil it down, we are going back to, you know, like the basics of every movie with a villain in it. Want to take over the world? Why?
Want to
take over the world?
Do you want to name that villain?
All of the villains. All of the villains. All of the Bond villains, all of the superhero movies. I am going to take over the world.
I bring up Airbus because I guess this is the theft of secrets and technical information. It's not a hack on an airliner in midair, they're not trying to cause the planes to crash.
They just want to know your secret.
It just shows how unprepared crucial elements of our society are for full on state cyber attacks. If Airbus can be breached, then Airbus can be breached in other ways. Then it's airliners can certainly be attacked, and that's a worry.
And we know about this because
this was a
GDPR thing.
So yes, they notified the French data protection authorities under their GDPR reporting obligations because they found that personal data relating to some of its employees had also been targeted.
People have to be told about that now.
Yeah, the belief that it was targeted through its suppliers. Was a leak to the Agence France-Presse news agency from sources within the company.
So basically you're having a lot of fun.
It's really interesting.
It's interesting. It's incredibly terrifying. This is stuff that happens in the world.
So on the nation state thing, I was in Finland with F-Secure this week and spoke to Mikko Hipponen.
Is he still around?
He is, yeah. He's one of the, the monsters of rock of global cybersecurity, really. You know, man with a view on every eventuality. So we had a fascinating conversation about
nation-state companies. He's been F-Secure for as long as I've been aware of this stuff.
Been F-Secure for about as long as there's been an F-Secure, I believe. But that'll be right enough.
Is he a founder of it, then?
I think he came on...
One of the first.
I think he was one of the first hires. I'm not sure he was a founder, but I might be very wrong on that. Anyway, that was a conversation that moved on that to cyber war, cyber weapons narrative, which I will be returning to in upcoming interviews.
But your networking background has given you a big advantage in this, hasn't it? Really, it's been a good move.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huawei will no doubt come up.
I'm trying to keep my I'm keeping an eye on Huawei. There's not been not a lot happening lately. There was a suggestion that they might try to sell themselves to a Western company in order to around the ban. So which would raise the question of who on earth would Huawei sell themselves to. You wouldn't expect the likes of Cisco to be in the frame to fancy that much. A government? Which government would be interested?
Don't know. What were the speculations? Maybe another...
I mean, I didn't see much speculation,
to be honest. An Ericsson or something?
I think if we were talking about a full-on sale of parts of Huawei's business, it would be broken up. I think that's the only conclusion we can really take from that. Nobody's going to take that business on. So the security parts will go, the networking, the core network parts will. But obviously, this may very well not happen. It's probably absolute nonsense. So
Well, I'm sure they're very determined to survive.
If that's the way they want to do it. But I can't really see it happening. Especially given some of Ren Shengfei's statements over the past few months. His loyalty to the company, his love of what he's built, it shines through in... shines through what he says. So I think this was not really a credible idea.
Well, no doubt more will come up on Huawei.
Absolutely.
Before the end of the year and beyond. So from cyber to... let's turn to the human, to health. Claire, you were listening to the new CEO of NHSX.
Yeah, so...
who is that?
So Matthew Gould. Gould. I think it's pronounced Gold, but it has a U in it. But that's cool. We, you know, each their own. I attended the Healthcare Excellence Through Technology event earlier this week. On behalf of our colleague Liz Evanstead, while she's away.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I listened to Matthew Gold speak a little bit about NHSX and its goals in sort of shifting the attitude towards digital within the NHS. Obviously, digital adoption in the NHS has been a massive topic for quite some time, and it's very, very difficult to really shift the dial on it because of the disparity and the silos, and every trust is different, every GP's.
We've discussed it on the podcast a fair bit, haven't we?
Yeah, so it's difficult. But basically he was saying, that he thinks that healthcare and technology both have something in common in that there are some cultural similarities. Part of the cultures that he said were similar was the problem-solving nature. So he was saying, technology and what? Technology and healthcare both, go head first at a problem to get the best solution.
So by technology, he's talking about IT.
Health tech. Digital solutions. To common problems, I guess.
Okay.
So he was saying, tech is a bit fail fast, learn and adapt, but healthcare is not really like that because you can't put patients in danger in that way, so it has to be more tried and tested, but there must be a way to connect the dots because there are similarities that can't be dismissed when it comes to tech and healthcare.
So they're seemingly different, but actually they're similar.
Yeah.
Right.
So he thinks it can work. He thinks it's going to be fine. But yeah, so he was talking about, the different ways that the NHSX is hoping to use tech to kind of help the NHS. And they have five key priorities. So I think some of them are making things easier for staff, so relieving some of the burden, making access to information and services and patient information easier, increasing productivity, all stuff that you want from technology, basically. But he was talking about some of the problems as well.
Okay.
That he went around. I think he went on a little tour before he started his job. He spent a month touring around.
That's nice.
Yeah, he had a little tour. And he was trying to go into GP practices and hospitals.
Interesting.
Yeah, he wanted to people to show him what they're using.
Uh-huh.
He said that he went into one GP practice, someone wanted to show him the system they're using, and it took so long for the system to boot up and for her to log in that he had to leave before she could actually show him anything.
Oh my god, that's awful.
Yeah, and he was like, well, it's just, a little bit of an overview of what we're dealing with here.
Maybe you should have stayed a bit longer, though.
I think you have to catch a train, I don't know.
My GP has a computer like that.
Yeah? My GP has a little touch screen. When you get there, instead of talking to someone, you check yourself in.
Yeah, I have that too.
We have that, but it's never working.
There you go. Also, I don't want to touch it. Loads of sick people have touched it.
And he's new in this job. It's a new thing, isn't it, NHSX?
Yeah.
If I remember correctly.
It's relatively new, yeah. And I think that he joined in the summer. Yeah. Maybe like May or something like that, May, June. So yeah, it's all very, very new. But, you know, he's
a big hitter.
Yeah, he's sort of halfway between optimistic and pessimistic. I think he's a bit realist. He's like, don't want to say we're going to fix everything, don't want to say we're not going to fix anything. Mm. You know, so halfway in between, I think it's good.
I liked his quote about NHSX not being an enormous empire.
Yeah.
At the centre of the NHS, it just called to mind sort of stormtroopers being sent in to fiddle with the Ethernet cables.
They're not building the Death Star of the healthcare system.
IT support for Darth Vader.
I quite like what I've read about this guy. In some ways, it's one of the things I love about this country of ours is, and I mean that fairly genuinely, is so he did Divinity and Philosophy at Peterhouse College, Cambridge. And then he joined the civil service. He's a career civil servant, right?
Mm-hmm.
He joined the Foreign Office. He was ambassador to, quite an important ambassador to Israel for 5-ish years.
Mm-hmm.
He was David Miliband's principal private secretary. I think that's the term. So I bet like in France or Germany or America, someone like this with his job would probably be a doctor. I mean, how boring. But we've got this, you know, this kind of creative thinking, policy expert type guy who's come from the world of diplomacy, essentially. Yeah. Did he talk about his that sort of thing?
Yeah, he did.
This reminds me of a time when I was in Israel.
Yeah, he did. He was talking quite a lot about... He sort of drew a comparison, you know. He was saying the UK and all of these different places that he's visited, culturally they're quite different, but there's always going to be something that brings them together. And that's
basically
what he said about tech and health as well.
Cool. Well, I mean, sticking with health, why not? Mm. So I did a very basic story this week about a new data science centre. Which is a joint venture between the British Heart Foundation and you kind of see in every high street and give your old books to and clothes to and stuff.
I was in the charity part. I just wondered if you meant like the charity shop side of the business or like the donation side.
It's
or
the
just
whole,
all
it's the
it.
Foundation.
Everything.
The research. Because they do research.
They do
for
research.
Heart disease
and
stuff. I bought a Diana Ross CD off them a few months
ago.
The latest hits.
Nice.
And then the other partner in this is Health Data Research UK, which is connected with this UK Research and Innovation Institute and the Department of Health and Social Care. So it's a serious thing. £10 million. Yeah. So they've appointed as its director Kathy Sudlow, who's a stroke and neurology doctor in Edinburgh. She actually starts on the 1st of November, so she's not actually started yet.
And she's already hit the ground running.
And she's going to establish a virtual team. So it's not going to be a physical centre for data science research. It's going to be virtual. And she'll decide what to do when she's properly in post. She'll be based at the Health Data Research UK headquarters. But, you know, it's a very... It's a great thing. It's there's a stat that she talked about, 7 million people in the UK affected by cardiovascular disease. So it's a big killer. It's probably the way I should make my exit, I should think.
Yeah, it's going to get a lot of us, heart disease.
You know, the old jam tart. But the idea is to look at lots of big data sources, disparate sources, and pull researchers together and make things more joined up and presumably start to do some predictive analytics and so on and so forth. So... no more than a basic press release story, really. And then the other thing I wanted to talk about, because we talked about Oracle last week being a very hard-nosed commercial organisation. This is quite a nice story where Oracle has made available its Oracle Cloud infrastructure to researchers from the University of Bristol and researchers from the CNRS in France.
Just to inject a little bit of Caroline's missing scepticism on the situation, define made available.
Freely available.
Freely available. All right, carry on.
For the duration of the project.
Okay.
Not forever and ever.
Right. Are they not going to need that when the project is finished to like store things or?
I don't think so. I think that the virtue of this is from what I understood talking to Phil Bates, who's Cloud Innovation Architect at Oracle. He's actually a physicist by background, not a biologist, but he's a joint author of the paper that issued from the research project, which was all about, I should say what the project was about.
Sorry.
It's all about coming up with a candidate synthetic vaccine against a mosquito-borne disease. And I'm dreading trying to pronounce this. It's chikungunya, the mosquito-borne disease, mostly in the tropics.
Mm-hmm.
Does kill people, but mostly just makes you feel a bit kind of drowsy and stuff.
I'd imagine that depends.
But there's no vaccine.
Looks like it's similar to malaria from what you've said, talking about chronic symptoms after you recover. So it sounds like a nasty one.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the level at which you suffer from it probably depends on the type of healthcare you receive.
And that sort of thing, yeah. Yeah. And as I was saying, Phil Bates at Oracle was cited as a joint author on the paper, which is published in a peer-reviewed open access journal called Science Advances. But getting back to the kind of technical point that he was trying to make, was it was all to do with the kind of elasticity of the compute they're making available to the researchers, or they made available to the researchers during the project. So at different points in the workflow, they need masses of compute, and then they don't.
Yeah.
And then they need masses of compute, and then they don't.
Yeah, like scaling.
Yeah, and the data has come from this cryo electron microscope, which just sounds like a kind of dolt's bollocks microscope that generates massive volumes of data. And that was the problem that the researchers at Bristol had. Emery Berger, who's director of the Max Planck Bristol Research for Minimal Biology in Bristol, that was the problem they had, was just dealing with all the data they were getting from the microscope.
Okay.
Things like that.
Alright then. So now it's all sorted, everything's great.
Thank God for that. I'm glad I've survived your scepticism, if only temporarily.
I mean, I'm just not vocalising it anymore. I've listened.
And you're storing it.
I shall process.
So I assume there's an element of machine learning and automation in some of the data crunching that they're going to be doing.
Undoubtedly, yeah. Anyway, the story's on the website. It's cool. Bristol, CNRS and Oracle join forces against tropical disease. So the other researchers are from Grenoble, the Centre National de la Recherche Scientifique. Very impressed with your French accent earlier.
Yeah, I realised I don't actually know how to pronounce Valerie's surname, but hopefully I got it right, or maybe he doesn't listen to the podcast. So.
But I think that's all I'm going to say about Oracle and its good deeds.
Max Planck Bristol Centre for Minimal Biology, but not for minimal names.
all look pretty cool to me. Then I don't really know anything about biology, so this was really a Caroline story.
Yeah.
Which I purloined, in effect.
Yeah, Caroline is a biologist.
She is.
By training.
And she's a big expert on cloud computing, so.
Yeah, she is.
Sticky fingers, McKenna, on this occasion. Righty-ho. So, next week, you're going to be back.
I'm back. Alex. I'm going to be finding out all I can about deepfakes in the next week or so, because I'm only three episodes into the capture, but I've already kind of figured out that this is the device upon which a lot of what is happening hangs. So
I'm just relieved that it seems to be quite popular within the podcast team. I was worried that it wouldn't be.
Well, you and Caroline started talking about it, and I think you recommended it to me because of the the security angle.
Yeah, well, you're the perfect person.
So I downloaded some of it to my phone to watch on my flight to Helsinki earlier in the week and got quite into it.
I mean, I've not watched any of it yet, but thank you, Brian, for sending me the link to it on iPlayer.
Well, you've got plenty of time to catch up.
Do I now?
Yeah, you've got a week.
That doesn't feel like long enough.
Well, you don't have to watch it all. How you get the essence of it.
Yeah, it won't make them recording the podcast any different, will it? If I have to be like, wait a minute, I just need to look this up because I don't actually know.
But we can talk about surveillance. London, one of the most surveyed cities on the planet, I heard the other day.
It is. And I'm already...
We vie with various Chinese cities.
Yeah, yes. I'm already starting to get some ideas about how, you know, so how some of the technology is being used in it and how, you know, what is actually possible. As well in terms of surveillance, I think there are elements of what is happening in it in the capture that are, I think, sci-fi.
Well, we'll come back to this next week. So much TV, so little time. And that's all we've got time for this week. So I just say thank you to Claire.
Anytime.
Thanks, Alex, for coming along and guesting. And thank you, gentle listener, for listening to our elucubrations. Goodbye.
Bye.
Bye.